They're still trying to reach a budget deal in Washington.
But right now, it looks like we're heading for a government shutdown.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for checking out the podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, the 7th day of April.
Coming up, the European Central Bank raises interest rates for the first time in 3 years. Why are they raising rates while the Fed keeps rates steady?
Also, mall vacancies hit their highest level in a decade.
And a new smartphone app tries to make hold music, or should I say Muzak, a thing of the past.
Those stories and more just ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
There's still no deal on the budget for the rest of this fiscal year, despite late-night negotiations at the White House, and the deadline to avoid a shutdown is midnight tomorrow. Now, if the government does close, things will be very different than they were during the last shutdown in the mid-90s. For one thing, we're fighting two wars, and Defense Secretary Robert Gates told troops in Iraq yesterday that their pay may be delayed.
Also, unlike the 90s, much of the federal government is on the internet now, and Marketplace's Janet Babin reports some federal websites could go dark.
E-filing your taxes may be the way to go this year. The online tax filing system is automated, so it's expected to stay active even if the government shutdown happens and paper tax returns are put on hold. But other government websites won't work anymore. It depends on whether the government decides they're essential.
If it involves the government spending money, there'll be a real question about whether that activity can continue.
That's Stan Collender, a federal budget expert with Corvus Communications. He says Facebook and Twitter updates might not be considered essential functions, or they could stay active so the president can communicate directly with the American people.
We're crossing a new threshold in the information age with this, so we'll have to wait and see how it's interpreted.
One online government service that is expected to shutter is E-Verify, the system employers use to confirm whether new hires are eligible to work in the U.S., and that would slow down new hiring. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Well, if the negotiations over this year's budget are the appetizer and negotiations over next year's budget are the entree, the dessert is the coming fight over whether to raise the federal debt ceiling. Lawmakers will have to lift it by more than $1 trillion this year to keep the U.S. government from defaulting on its debt. For more on what that means, let's bring in Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell. Good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
So what is the big deal with this debt ceiling?
The U.S. Treasury is the AAA security in the world. It is the risk-free security. So if we don't raise the debt ceiling and we end up defaulting on that debt, it would be catastrophic for the U.S. economy and the world economy.
And have we always had this debt ceiling?
No, the first debt ceiling came about in 1917. And then later on in 1939, we got the debt ceiling as we now know it. It's an aggregate limit. Back in 1939, it was set at $45 billion. And since then, by the way, Jeremy, it's been raised about 100 times.
Yeah, it's a little bit bigger these days. Well, what would happen if we didn't raise the debt ceiling?
Well, if we didn't raise the debt ceiling sometime around May 16th, possibly, or around that date, we would then have to start scrambling to try to continue to pay our debts that a lot of foreigners own and banks own and insurance companies and retirees own. And we'd have to make a lot of very difficult choices about how to conserve cash. And eventually we would face default.
Default. And what if we do keep raising the debt ceiling? Don't investors get worried if we just keep borrowing more and more money?
Well, look, investors care about two things. One, they do want to see a long-term budget plan. Absolutely. No question about that. But secondly, investors don't even like the talk of default. This is the AAA security in the world, and it could end up being a junk bond.
Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
There's a study out today, Jeremy, in the journal Health Affairs. It finds the rate of hospital errors is 10 times what's been measured in the past.
Hmm.
Yeah. And a third of all admissions leads to a complication caused by medical care. So that means you go to the hospital and something at the hospital makes you sick.
Yeah.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports it's a multi-billion-dollar problem.
Dr. David Klassen is at the University of Utah. His team analyzed individual patient records at three large hospitals looking for medical mistakes.
These are significant events because it's not they gave me a pill and I got a stomachache. They gave me a pill and I started throwing up blood and they had to treat me.
It's a more rigorous method than most hospitals use. They typically rely on voluntary reporting by medical staff or on insurance claims. Dr. John Santa of Consumer Reports says the problem costs at least $17 billion a year.
We have an expensive system, and increasingly we know it's expensive because there's many mistakes.
According to another study in Health Affairs, the most expensive hospital-caused complications come from incorrect medication, post-operative infections, and bed sores. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Portugal has asked the European Union for a bailout. The country is mired in debt, and it's looking for somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 billion.
Meanwhile, the United Nations said today its food price index fell last month, the first drop in 8 months.
So much for the anti-tax sentiment. Voters in St. Louis and Kansas City this week overwhelmingly renewed earnings taxes there.
More numbers always in the numbers section at marketplace.org.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, April 7th. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Now let's get to the global perspective. What's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world? We got word this morning that the European Central Bank is raising interest rates on borrowing for the first time in 3 years. They're doing that to battle inflation. Marketplace's Europe correspondent Stephen Beard is with us now from London with the latest. Stephen.
Hello, Jeremy. Well, the European Central Bank is clearly more worried about inflation than the debt problems of Eurozone countries like Portugal. The ECB has raised interest rates to curb further price rises, but the US Fed is facing a similar level of inflation, and it's keeping its interest rates on hold. So who's right, the Fed or the ECB? Economist Simon Tilford says the ECB has blundered. The Fed is right.
Given the uncertainties facing economic recovery and the fact that one way or another the US government is going to start cutting spending, it really is crucial that monetary policy remains as expansionary as possible.
And today is a landmark, Jeremy. This is the first time in 40 years that after an economic downturn, a key European central bank has raised rates before the Fed.
Wow. Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, Jeremy.
And let's get reaction now from Diane Swank. She's chief economist with Mesirow Financial, and she's with us from Chicago, as she is every Thursday. The European Central Bank, Diane, wants to battle inflation, but they've got similar inflation to what we have right now, which is to say not very much. Why are the Europeans raising rates when the Fed is keeping rates the same?
Well, there's two very simple reasons. The first is that Europe, the largest economies in Europe, most notably Germany, are much stronger than they are in the U.S. and in much more inflation prone. The second reason is that Europe has to deal with the euro, and while they've had all these debt crises, they need to defend the credibility of the European Central Bank, which is the only thing that unifies the eurozone at the moment. Remember, they're also making these rate hikes and giving hundreds of billions in bailout dollars to the periphery countries, like most notably Portugal, which asked for funds yesterday, will likely get them this weekend to offset the effect of that rate hike on that country.
To the tune of, I think, $100 billion. Diane, before I let you go, I want to ask you about the possibility of a government shutdown in this country, which could come tomorrow night at midnight. What concerns you most about that possibility?
Well, not only the direct economic consequences for the U.S. economy of jobs lost and people not being paid, checks not being received in the mail, but more importantly, what it sends as a message to the rest of the world of our inability to deal with our own deficit problem. That is not confidence in the U.S. and the ability for us to come to any agreement about the long-term deficit. This is a lot of noise and a lot of hysterics, but not really getting to the core issues of the problem, and that worries me because we have a lot of foreign investors counting on us getting it right.
And we're going to get to that in just a second. Diane Swank, chief economist at Mesirow Financial, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Well, as the budget issues here at home are coming to a head, other countries have taken an interest in the U.S.'s ongoing budget saga. The BBC's Rebecca Singer reports.
The European press is intrigued by the political theatrics of the past week. A government shutdown for anything other than a general strike is a foreign concept here. But the European financial sector isn't really concerned just yet about the US budget woes. Gabriel Stein is the director of Lombard Street Research, which looks at macroeconomic forecasting. He says there's no reason to worry in the short term because the US government isn't at risk of defaulting.
But of course it is a problem that the US does have a very dysfunctional budget process, and over the long term the US needs to deal with the inexorable rise of the entitlements, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security.
Stein says if it doesn't do that, then there will eventually be a real problem with the US government and the value of its debt.
If people fear that the US can't service all its debt, they will demand a higher interest rate in order to hold that debt.
If that happens, the US would either be forced to balance its books or the country could face the risk of inflation. In London, I'm the BBC's Rebecca Singer for Marketplace.
If the federal government does shut down tomorrow night, Jeremy, non-essential employees won't be the only ones temporarily out of work. Mm. Their government-issued smartphones are likely to get the boot
as
well.
Poor yeah. smartphones.
Well, an administration official tells the Wall Street Journal, and I didn't know this, if a federal worker is furloughed, it is illegal to work.
Wow.
You can have criminal charges brought against
can't
you.
Can't check your phone. Or
so a lot of people are concerned they can't even check their smartphones, right? Huh. The emails on their BlackBerry. So that includes looking at and responding to those emails. And one government staffer tells the Wall Street Journal she's thinking about a 12-step BlackBerry withdrawal program.
You know, Steve, I have to say, it doesn't surprise me. Those people in Washington, they are addicted to their BlackBerries.
To their BlackBerries. And like you're any different with you and your iPhone, Jerry. Please, come on. I'm the same way. You're listening to the Midday Update for Thursday, April 7th. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson on Twitter, at Jeremy Hobson.
And you can follow me on Twitter as well. It's simple, at Radio Chio. You can also give us your feedback, by the way, by going to marketplace.org and clicking on the link that says contact.
Well, Steve, if you believe the retail sales, people do seem to be buying a bit more stuff these days, but you would not know that by visiting the mall.
Yeah.
A report out this morning shows mall vacancies are at their highest level in a decade, over 9%. Marketplace's Gregory Warner has that story.
Strip mall owners are getting desperate. They're offering perks like free rent and settling for retail stores they normally hate to accept, like chiropractic clinics. Michael Levy is professor of marketing at Babson College.
I mean, think about it. If your back hurts, you're not going to go shopping and have your shoes repaired.
He says small storefront businesses, which make up the bulk of strip mall retailers, have taken a hit in the recession, and anchor stores keep leaving. First Circuit City, then Blockbuster.
Now, wait a minute. I'll tell you the here and the now. Let's not look back. Let's look forward. What about when we lose the Borders and the Barnes and Nobles? Because they also are anchors.
Faith Hope Consolo chairs the retail division at Prudential. She says the strip mall as an institution may be on the way out.
It just doesn't work anymore. The format doesn't work.
It may be going the way of the department store. I'm Gregory Warner for Marketplace.
The number of people filing for first-time jobless claims was down once again last week by 10,000. That's according to the Labor Department. Now that, of course, is a sign the job market continues to improve for now. But the recovery has been better for men than for women. St. Louis Public Radio's Adam Allington reports.
In 2009, economists were calling it the mancession. That's because most of the jobs lost were in male-dominated sectors like manufacturing and construction. Now we could be seeing a mancovery, says St. Louis University economist Jack Strauss. But the jobs picture for women is going in the opposite direction.
The private sector has been creating jobs. The manufacturing sector has been slowly rebounding. But what's been going on is we've been losing jobs in education. We've been losing jobs in local and state governments. Those jobs are primarily populated by women.
According to the Labor Department, of the 1.3 million jobs created last year, nearly 90% went to men. But the unemployment rate among women actually rose and is expected to rise even higher as more people like Kimberly Hopkins lose their jobs.
I did receive a notice of honorable dismissal.
Hopkins is a speech therapist for the East St. Louis School District. The district plans to lay off nearly 300 teachers this summer.
Oh, it means everything for me and my family. I'm a single parent, as well as I take care of my elderly mother. So my income is substantial to the household.
The Labor Department says the unemployment rate among single mothers is 12.3%. Joan Entmacher is the Vice President for Family Economic Security at the National Women's Law Center in Washington, D.C. She says women faced greater risks from unemployment even before the recession.
This is an extremely vulnerable group. Lower pay, less savings. They're more likely to be single parents. More than half of all poor children live with single mothers. So the high unemployment there is a real crisis.
Entmacher cautions that the threat of long-term unemployment affects both men and women and could weigh down any recovery for years to come. In St. Louis, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
And finally, Steve, let me make a quick phone call.
Okay.
Oh, right on hold.
Oh, here we go again.
Hold music. Well, now, Steve, it appears there's an app for this. It's called Fast Customer.
I like this music.
Well, if you want to wait on hold, you're more than welcome to. But Fast Customer will do it for you. And then when the operator picks up, it tells them to dial 1 to be connected to you.
Wow.
Which is a nice way to turn the tables on those. There is one little catch, though, Steve. While you're waiting for your phone to ring, you will have to remember why you were calling in the first place.
So after about 20 minutes, if you've been on hold too
Who
long.
Who is this?
I forgot what this is all about.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I like the music. I don't know why. Steve Chiotakis. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.